Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. Researchers at the Center for Disease Dynamics, Economics and Policy released new data recently documenting alarming rates of bacteria resistant to last resort antibiotics. They say this can lead to the life-threatening infections across the world. High rates in low and middle income countries like India and Kenya sound a warning to the world. For example, in India, 57% of the infections caused by Klebsiella pneumonia, it is a dangerous superbug found in hospital, they were found to be resistant to one type of last resort drug in 2014, up from 29% in 2008. What an increase. Now, observers say one of the reasons is how easy it is in some places for patients to have access to drugs without the necessary prescriptions. Well, we'll discuss this and more on today's program. And joining us via phone from Nigeria is Dr. Edwin Ndukwe. Dr. Ndukwe is a trained clinical pharmacist. Dr. Edwin Ndukwe, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So what city are you joining us in from?
I'm here in Abuja, the federal capital territory of Nigeria.
Absolutely. How are things in Abuja? How is the weather there?
Lovely. Just similar to what you have in New York at this time of the year or somewhere in Texas. So not much different.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Ndukwe, we look forward to our discussion very shortly. And let me remind our listeners that you can email your questions at healthchat@voanews.com or post them on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And we will discuss our access to medicine and antibiotic abuse in a moment. But first, VOA's Lisa Schlein has this report on WHO's raising the alarm on antibiotic resistance. Take a listen.
The WHO study finds no region in the world is prepared to combat this serious global threat. Only one quarter of the 133 countries has a comprehensive plan to fight resistance to antibiotics and other antimicrobial medicines. The survey also finds public awareness of the issue remains generally low, and many people believe antibiotics are effective against viral infections. It says this leads to antibiotics being used when they are not required or effective, which can lead to resistance. WHO Coordinator for Antimicrobial Resistance Charles Penn says the survey also shows the sale of antibiotics and other antimicrobial medicines without a prescription is widespread throughout the world. He says this increases the potential for overuse, thereby worsening the problem of resistance.
Without urgent action, the world is heading for what is being termed a post-antibiotic era, in which common infections and minor injuries have been treatable for decades, may once again kill, and we will lose the ability to treat a range of serious conditions such as bloodstream infections, pneumonia, tuberculosis, malaria, HIV, and the benefits of advanced medical treatment, such as cancer chemotherapy and major surgery, will also become much riskier and may well be lost.
Penn makes clear this is not a future problem. He tells VOA there are diseases and infections today that are no longer treatable with available antibiotics.
We often give the example of gonorrhea, where around the world there are examples of cases of this which do not respond to any of the antibiotics available to us. Another example would be hundreds of thousands of new cases of multidrug-resistant tuberculosis each year. Again, these are infections that have already become very difficult to treat. And it's difficult to put a precise number on what will happen in the future, but if we don't act, then it can only get worse.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Dr. Ndukwe, again, thank you for joining us. Let me have your reaction on the report that you heard earlier. The fact that people are just using antibiotics without any control. It's as if people just have easy access to those antibiotics. How do you react to this?
Well, it's certainly very difficult situation that we have to contend with, not just in Nigeria, but all across the globe. at some time ago, I believe it was 2014, CDC had put out a number estimating that about 2 million people, just in America alone, fell ill to antibiotic resistance. And out of that, 23,000 people died. And so you see, it's a public health crisis that we have to deal with, particularly in resource-poor economies or emerging economies like Nigeria. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even have the numbers. You know, you can imagine what that would look like. But, you know, overall, antibiotic resistance has been around for ages. I mean, since the introduction of the first antibiotic. What we've done in the past, or our response rather, has been either systematic approach to research and development. That's one way. And sometimes by sheer luck of serendipity, you know, you stumble upon the magic drug that actually fights off that bug, the super bug again, and then we create another scenario. So it's really frightening, but
yes.
I think we're working to it.
Well, I think one of the issues here is the fact that even fundamentally, people don't even understand what antibiotics are for, because I feel like a lot of people think once you're sick, you need an antibiotic. If you have a cold, you need an antibiotic. So would you please help us understand, when does somebody need an antibiotic? Is it to fight a virus? Is it to fight a bacteria? And when do we need that?
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because really the core of the problem is what I would call incomplete dosing.
Okay.
When patients sometimes, you know, they go see a prescriber, a doctor, you know, and typically the way it should be done is if you have common cold symptoms, for instance, go to a local pharmacy, probably advised to take some antihistamine combination of sorts, and you try for some days and there's no relief, then, of course, the laboratory investigation becomes imperative. And so upon then, the physician can determine exactly what you need and give you the right medication. But what happens in most cases here in this country, and most other countries, particularly in Nigeria, sub-Saharan Africa, is that people feel funny. They feel ill. They feel that they have some whiffle. And then they go to the pharmacy and say, okay, give me some amoxicillin, some Augmentin. And the man behind the counter hands it over to them. They go home and take it, you know. And sometimes it's inappropriate, because it may not be a target, you know, it may not be for the right target.
But as a pharmacist, don't pharmacists everywhere, whether it's in Africa or in the West, don't they have a responsibility to ask certain questions, especially when a patient comes with no prescription and just decides what he needs? Isn't there some type of laws or responsibility that the pharmacist has to ask the patient for the right prescription?
Clearly, there is a law in the book that guides our practice, whether in Nigeria or in the United States. I can tell you, for instance, in the United States, prescription drugs are only issued by a registered physician having made his own assessment. So there has to be a patient-physician relationship first. And once the physician determines that you need an antibiotic, he issues a prescription, which you take to the pharmacy. The pharmacy will then have to evaluate the dosing and make sure all the numbers are correct before dispensing the medication, and also on top of that, counseling the patient on how to take the medication. But here in Nigeria, what I've discovered, which is not what is in the book, what's in the book, as I said, is applicable to what's obtainable in the United States. But what happens most cases is that people approach the pharmacy and tell them, give them a name of the drug that they want. And unfortunately, without any prescription, any handwritten prescription. I'm not saying that all the time, but that's most of the cases that I've seen. Mm-hmm. And they do that for whatever constraints, maybe financial constraints, and they do that. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. And then the other part of it is there's another group called the patent medicine store, which is, to me, another casualty of itself, because these are people who do not have you know, the requisite pharmaceutical or drug knowledge. Yet the mandate actually is to dispense over-the-counter medications, you know, things like Panadol, acetaminophen, common cold medications. But in that process, they out overreach their boundaries. They also dispense other medications. And that's, like I said, it's terrible. And that needs to be addressed. It's handicapping a lot of patients because you have cases of abuse, antibiotic abuse, and of course, the resistance to develop, and all the other health problems that comes along with this.
Okay. Now, we have a question by Patrick in Ghana, and he wants to know, he said, what is the impact of fake medicine in drug resistance?
Well, first of all, I mentioned incomplete dosage. Say you are sick and you are given a 10-day therapy for any sort of kind of antibiotic, and you take it for 5 days, and you start feeling better. You know, sunshine comes up, you feel good. And then some people stop taking it. That's wrong. It's inappropriate. Because that is what I call suboptimal antibiosis. Okay, so the medication you have on board is not enough to actually deal with the bug that you have in your system. So it becomes problematic over time because the bug develops a shell around it or acquires some level of ability to survive in the presence of that particular agent, you know. And so, again, it's a problem in our society. Fake drugs is another major problem. A counterfeit drug or substandard drug, it's a major problem as well. And I can name a whole list of reasons why these things exist or prevail in our environment. One could be because of, you know, high cost of drugs. You know, drugs are expensive. And why are they expensive? Perhaps the importer has to pay a lot of money to get the drugs from overseas. Mm-hmm. You know, high tariffs, that could be one of them. And high registration costs at the regulatory bodies here in this country. So all that, the importer has to tag on the excess cost on the medication. So the consumer ends up bearing the burden, the financial burden of this process. And so because people, low-income earners, you know, may not be able to afford the drug, then they turn around and look for alternate solutions. And that could be, again, finding the patent medicine store that may be willing to sell expired drug or fake drug, substandard drug, or suboptimal drug. You know, that, those are how it happens. And it's a major problem in this country.
And Alice in Kenya actually is asking about the difference between counterfeit drug and substandard drug.
Well, counterfeit drug, number one, is that it doesn't have any significant active ingredient as a component of it. It could simply be a chalk or anything that looks like a capsule of a sort. Mm-hmm. But it's not exactly what it is. But the substandard drug is a formulation of a lower concentration, you know, something that has a lower strength, a suboptimal strength. And therefore, in comparison with the original high-level performing drug, it's in fact dangerous, really. It's dangerous because what it does ultimately is to enable the agent that is attacking your body to gain in strength and to do more harm and damage to your body. So those are two differences. The fact that one, it's purely nothing active, no good chemical agent that's active. Mm-hmm. And the other one has some level of activity, but it's not enough to subvert the agent that is causing the problem.
Okay, and we have more questions coming in. One from Nigeria, from Chinere. And this will be right after we take a break. Dr. Ndukwe, don't go away. We'll be right back after this break.
Sure.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria is transmitted by mosquito bites. But there are some things you can do to reduce your risk. Wear light-colored, loose-fitting clothing, including long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. Eliminate any standing water around your home, including water that collects in wood piles, taps, puddles, old buckets, water jugs, and containers that livestock drink from. And if you can get one, use an insecticide-treated bed net to cover you and your children while you sleep.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Welcome back to Health Chat. If you are just joining us, tonight we are discussing access to medicine and the issue of antibiotic abuse. And our guest is clinical pharmacist Dr. Edwin Ndukwe, who is joining us from Lagos. And if you'd like to ask a question, you can also call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. And you can ask the operator to reverse the charges. Dr. Ndukwe, we will continue our conversation in just a moment. But first, let's take a listen to this report by VOA's reporter Elizabeth Pollard. She talks about the issue of antibiotic abuse in Uganda. Take a listen.
Although it is technically illegal to distribute antibiotics without a prescription in Uganda, pharmacies are often teeming with customers buying the drugs with little or no oversight. Over time, bacteria have built up resistance to the overused drugs. Studies find that in Uganda, 80% of the bacteria that cause diseases such as pneumonia or tuberculosis are resistant to antibiotics. Advocates say part of the problem is understaffing. Uganda has only 600 pharmacists for a population of 37 million. This leaves many to self-prescribe, especially in rural areas. Kennedy Odokunyero, the speaker of the Makerere University Pharmacy Students Association, says villagers can do this because they have hoarded the drugs.
So if they get to know that there's a new supply, National Medical Stores has just supplied that health facility. So on a Monday morning, everyone in the village will come. Their thing is they want to get the medicines because they sell a lot of it, get the medicines and take it to their homes and keep it, so that in the event that they fall sick, they have the medicines just there, so they use it.
The Rational Medical Use campaign, now being rolled out by the Pharmaceutical Society of Uganda, is using social media and community outreach to urge citizens to get an accurate diagnosis before starting medication. It also discourages the sharing of medicines and reminds people to finish their prescribed doses. Uganda National Academy of Sciences Global Antibiotic Resistance Partnership has also published a report attempting to tackle the problem of antibiotic abuse. Professor Dennis Biarugaba, a microbiologist who chairs the group, says clinicians and pharmacists are the first line of defense.
Because the common person, I mean, given our education levels, may not appreciate what all this means. But for somebody who has been in a medical school or has been through any kind of professional medical-related field should understand really what it means every time they administer or they dispense an antibiotic without a prescription, without knowing that actually this person has got a bacterial infection.
Medical professionals are hoping that by making the public aware of the dangers, they can stop the abuse of antibiotics and allow new drugs to remain effective when they come on the market. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Now, Dr. Ndukwe, in this report, my colleague Elizabeth is talking about part of what she's saying in this report is the role of pharmacists. And this leads me to the question that was sent by Chinyere in living in Port Harcourt. She says, fake drugs are everywhere in Nigeria, and it seems pharmacists don't care. That's what she says. She said pharmacists need to do more to address this issue. What can you tell us, Dr. Ndukwe, in terms of the role that pharmacists should play in addressing this issue?
I believe pharmacists need to be consistent with the oath that they took when they received the registration. And that is to make sure that they do not aid the process of distribution of fake drugs. The other larger party that needs to be involved is the regulatory agencies, really. because they are the ones that have complete oversight of distribution of drugs in manufacturing in Nigeria, particularly. And so enforcing some of the existing laws to checkmate these infiltration of these fake drugs, support regular visits to pharmacies, conducting inspections, at least looking at their shelves to make sure that the drugs on the shelf have NAFDAC numbers or registration, which indicates that it's an illegal drug to have on the shelf. So frequent visits to stores is important. Tightening of, or rather enforcing penalties for those who break the law is also important. And holding pharmacists accountable when they are discovered to be aiding this process. Awareness is also another aspect that needs to be emphasized. You know, it's important to create policies and laws. It's also important to disseminate those policies and make and create a robust awareness, not just in the grassroots, but everywhere, so that people will know the risk involved, to understand that what the government is trying to do is actually to protect them, to discourage any party or any entity that is attempting to propagate this fake drug empire business. You know? So the pharmacy has a role, the regulatory bodies have a role to play, the citizenry also has a role. You know? So it's a multi-pronged approach to dealing with the issue of fake drugs.
Well, this issue of counterfeit drugs and subset standard drugs, it's a whole different area. It's such a big, complex issue. But if we look at, if we come back to the problem of antibiotic resistance, and in the report, it says that diseases and infections today, there are some diseases that are no longer treatable with available antibiotics. So that's very scary, isn't it?
Very, very scary. I mean, I was at a local pharmacy a few days ago talking to a pharmacist, and she says to me, you know, this issue of drug resistance, it's really frightening because some time ago she used to treat, she feels like she has typhoid fever, okay? So she treats it with cephalosporins, okay? Mm-hmm. And she'll be fine. And then she says the next time she tried it, and it didn't work, so she had to go to the third generation cephalosporins. And then that didn't work after a while. Then she moved on to the fluoroquinolone. So she's, and then the last time she encountered this episode of typhoid fever, she said none of those agents that she had taken in the past worked. Mm-hmm. So now she did a stool culture, and the only thing that could handle the problem was gentamicin. I mean, this is the pharmacist talking. Yeah. So that tells you that this is a real problem.
Yes, yes, yes. I think then there is a need for really increased awareness for people to understand that, you know, first of all, antibiotics are not good for everything. You have a cold, you can't just take antibiotics. You have to know what kind of cold you know, you have. Is it viral, bacterial? I mean, I'm not a doctor, and you have better knowledge on the subject. But I'm just, I think we can both agree that there is a need for more awareness, right?
Certainly, and I think that's very paramount, that through the government agencies, through the public health department, that there needs to be a massive drive to create awareness in the community, you know, highlighting the danger of this problem, highlighting the benefit of adopting a new plan of action in the ballot. Not to take medications because you heard it worked for Mr. A or Mr. B, to get yourself checked out. And there's another issue that probably we haven't addressed, and that is the social factor. You know, the social factor in the sense that the culturally motivated tendencies within our community, you know, where people are generally averse to conventional therapies, medicine. You know, and so they are sick. They know quite where they are sick, but they just can't. They don't really think it's the best for them, and so it becomes. They have this barrier then for access to medications, and then which ultimately leads to more and more problems. So social culture, I think awareness will also help to address the issue.
And culture, very important indeed in our settings. As an African myself, I can understand how sometimes it has a big, big influence in some of the behaviors that we have.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then when we look at this whole issue of antibiotic resistance, Dr. Ndukwe, moving forward, I know you talked about some solutions. You talked about some of the steps that could be taken. But if we look at the big picture globally, whose responsibility is it first? Is it locally, governments, doctors, people themselves? Where does the solution start?
I think it starts with the clinicians, those who are hand and foot in the field, dealing with the patients. I mean, very important step that we need to take is to encourage improved hygiene, particularly in the hospital setting. This is where you have a predominant case of this resistant issues that come up. And so simple universal precaution, it's very, very important to at least cut short to prevent any resistance from developing. So the clinical environment is important. At the retail outlets, you know, the pharmacists themselves being conscious of their responsibility and adjudicating their duties, you know, in line with their code of conduct, or code of their oaths that they took, it's important. And the government can play, too, this environment by supporting enhanced disease surveillance as well. That's important. Increasing laboratory capacity for more testing or investigation. Creating access to quality medication is also important. And enforcing drug regulation and control. And also that also comes under the public health department. Mm-hmm. They can help to champion this cause. The other thing that perhaps I haven't mentioned is the patent law issue. A patent law gives an exclusive right to a patentee to recoup the cost of investment over a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have a strong patent law in place in this environment, what it does is that it discourages innovation.
Okay.
Innovation is critical. It's critical to develop new drugs, mm-hmm. To formulate new tools that will deal with this crisis, this health crisis. And so the government can also help and support creating the right enabling environment, the resources, so that people can pursue research and development to come up with newer formulations that will help to address some of these immediate challenges. So that's also important.
Okay, Dr. Edwin Ndukwe, thank you so much for joining us today from Abuja.
Thank you, too.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Dr. Edwin Ndukwe, who is a clinical pharmacist who was joining us from Nigeria. For more on today's show, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. Also, log on to facebook.com/voahealthchat and let's keep the conversation going. I'm your host, Linor Mudu, in Washington, D.C., with producer Kwame stepping in for Jackson Vugani. Until next time, take care. Be well and strive to make every day a healthy day.